Good morning. A Nolan Show investigation has revealed staggering figures of wages being paid to locum doctors. In the last year, $32.3 million was spent. Now listen to these figures. The top outlay to one doctor for one day's work, £2,400 for one 12-hour shift. £2,400 for one 12-hour shift. Another doctor was paid more than £15,000 for one week's work. As a team, we've been looking into this. Shanaz Somjay is chair of the Locum Doctors Association. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. And the SDLP MLA, Fergal McKinney, with us today. Good morning, Fergal.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And the PP's Dr. John Kyle is GP, of course. Morning to you, John.
Good morning, Stephen.
I might need to come up and see you later, John. right. Shanaz, how on earth can this be justified?
Firstly, I'd like to point out that staff are employed by locum agencies. Hospitals use them rather than engage staff directly, even though doctors are happy to work directly for the hospitals. So it's the agency which gets the bulk of the money and pays only a fraction to the doctor. The doctors get something, well, a consultant will get £85 an hour. Now, that is much less compared to the earnings of comparable professionals like barristers and accountants.
It was 2,400 quid for a 12-hour shift.
Wait a minute. A barrister charges, a solicitor charges £200 an hour. A barrister charges £800 an hour. And an equally qualified doctor who works extra hard, stays up nights, only gets £85 an hour gross, not net. So that's much less. So you're getting what plumbers and electricians charge. And the total amount you're talking about, that depends on the work. Doctors stay awake all night. And they have to pay for a lot of things from this money. This money doesn't all go into their pockets. Locums do not get any pension superannuation contributions. They do not get study leave fees for CPD and courses. They don't get sick leave. They don't get any annual leave, only minimal working time directive pay.
They don't
have employment protection.
Our hearts bleed for them, Shanaz, when they're getting £2,500 a day.
Well, they also have to pay accommodation. And do you know how much hospitals charge for accommodation for 1 week? As much as £400 and £500. And they charge
for a week?
Yes, and they don't pay travel expenses. So the doctors are expected to do what is like a charity for the
NHS. But if that doctor earned 15 grand in 1 week, he can afford 400 quid.
99% do not earn £15,000 for a week. Very few do. And that must be for 24 hours, 24/7 on call. Have you looked at the shifts they've worked? They've stayed awake 7 nights a week to look after patients to earn that money.
Fergal?
Not just for 1 or 2 days.
What do you think, Fergal?
I just don't think it's defendable. And even the evidence that your guest has given there is saying that a lot of this money isn't actually going to the front line because there are organisations who sort out who's doing what locum work, and some of the money's going there. No, what it demonstrates, and, you know, whatever the arguments are coming from the Locum Doctors Association about their needs, et cetera, at a strategic level, this big sum, the $32.3 million, demonstrates that, you know, the system is failing. And, you know, if we had proper workforce planning in place, then we may not have the need for this. Remember what this $32.3 million is doing. In terms of the conversations we've had before, transforming your care was supposed to fund into the community, and that hasn't happened. And in the meantime, the hospital system is reducing, for example, hospital beds and cutting at that end. In many ways, what the transforming your care and the system is doing is squeezing the toothpaste tube from both ends, and we're ending up paying $32.3 million to clear up the mess.
Yeah, but these would be doctors, John Kyle, who would be working long, long hours.
Well, sometimes, Stephen, not always. I mean, some locum cover is essential. You know, you've got annual leave, you've job vacancies, maternity, sickness leave, study leave. So the health trusts have to employ locums by necessity to cover those planned or anticipated or expected absences.
Well, some people will be choosing to be locums, John, because there's good money to be made.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, some people are choosing to do locums because that's their lifestyle choice, and there are pros and cons to it. And some doctors do choose to do that. But Fergal's right in that there is also a workforce planning issue here. We're dealing with market forces. It's supply and demand. And when there are insufficient doctors, the trusts have to get doctors to cover shifts. I mean, they can't just simply close a casualty unit because they've got nobody to staff it. So they must provide doctors. So there is, you know, there's a supply and demand issue here. There's forward planning. You know, have we got it right? Well, clearly
well,
we haven't.
Here are the stats. Here are the stats that we've uncovered. The Western Trust, top outlay to one doctor, £2,400 for a 12-hour shift. The Northern Trust, £1,024 for an 8-hour shift. The Southern Trust, £871 for an 8-hour shift. Belfast Trust, £1,121 for an 8.5-hour shift. The South Eastern Trust, £15,182 to one doctor for 1 week's work.
Yes, but that week entails hard work, 24/7.
Yeah, he worked 127 hours.
How much do you think someone should pay for working weekends and 24/7 and unsociable hours and lacking sleep? Is anybody else in this country prepared to work?
Is there anybody else in this country?
Doctors?
Is there anybody else in this country earning 15 grand in a week?
Yeah, are they prepared to work Saturdays and Sundays to save your lives?
Well, listen, the reality is...
If Oakham's withdrew work, your hospitals would shut down. Is your health and your life so cheap that you can't pay £85 an hour to a locum consultant?
A locum system should be in place, but it should be there to patch up gaps here and there.
Exactly.
And even the description of the £15,000 for 1 week and that doctor's working or on call 24/7, that's not acceptable either. But this has also been repeated, remember, in bank and agency staff and in terms of nursing, where £50 million was spent last year in terms of short-term. And it's not an effective way to run the service. Those who are coming in on a part-time basis aren't as aware of the patient systems, etc. They could be working in one place today and in another place tomorrow. So there needs to be a better answer. Now, the RQAA, in a report yesterday, said that our emergency departments are too populated with temporary workers. The RCM is on record as saying that there aren't enough full-time staff. And we know that the system is looking at workforce planning, but it's not doing it half fast enough. If you add those two figures together, 32.3 and 50 million, plus elsewhere, that's the guts of £100 million.
You could actually reduce that figure to half if you employed the locums directly on the NHS and left the middleman, the agencies, out. But unfortunately, the hospitals refuse to accept our services directly. And they are not just engaging locums through the agencies. They are paying agencies huge fees to engage substantive permanent staff as well. Now, why are they doing this?
Should there not be a cap, Shanaz, in what the National Health Service is prepared to pay a locum?
No, because there are no caps for everybody else. Why should we take a cap and barristers, accountants, businessmen, bankers, bonuses have no caps? Well, bonuses have a cap at millions.
Well, because the National Health Service...
Why are people going to be victimised? I mean, you will find the doctors...
National Health Service is a public body. It's public money.
Yes, but
why should there not be a cap?
To pay. Do we get caps on the bills we pay? No, but we have to pay huge amounts to the General Medical Council, the Medical Defence Union, which charges larger for locums. And we also have to pay for CPD revalidation. We don't get free revalidation like the NHS doctors do. We have to pay thousands of pounds from our pocket for these. Where do we get all those things that other doctors are getting? No.
But Stephen, we will continue to have stories like this coming time and time again. Last year it was accident emergency. This year at the start was elective care. We've been banging on for ages about banking agency. Now it's about locums. And all of it points to a system that is in fact failing or is certainly not being as efficient as it could be. And some of the questions that I've been asking more recently reveal now that in fact the system doesn't even understand the flows that are going through it. Do you know, for example, the health system here does not monitor in detail what GPs do? There is also a dispute at the moment between the pharmacies and the health system over what pharmacies do, and you know that's in the courts. So there's a fundamental misunderstanding.
John Kyle?
I'll just finish this. Those are the two front doors to the health system. And one other thing we discovered last week is that despite the fact that transforming your care was about a growing older population, the system has not yet done any investigation, for example, into domiciliary care. So it isn't understanding the flows through the system. And that's why it's paying £32 million for locums, and that's why it's doing bank.
Okay, go on, John.
Because it's only shoring up.
Okay, Stephen. Well, I mean, I think Fergal perhaps oversimplifies it. There definitely are issues with the front doors. A&E and general practice are both stretched fully and routinely, and they're really struggling to cope. with what they have to do. So there are problems there in terms of manpower, in terms of workforce planning, but the solutions to that are not short-term. You can't solve that problem in a year or 2 years. That's a 10-year job to do it, or at least a 5-year job, and that needs to be addressed. But Fergal is right. Transforming Your Care was supposed to deal with this, and it has not been fully implemented. The resources that are needed to implement Transforming Your Care have really not materialised. And that is the way, ultimately, to deal with the problem. You want to move care from hospitals into the community and provide adequate support and resources for patients to be dealt with in their homes and in the community.
Here's John in Dungannon. Morning, John.
Stephen, the point I want to make is one of the ladies there was sort of justifying the 15 grand a week.
Yes.
With the amount of hours that the doctors work.
That's Shanaz Somji justifying it.
Pardon?
Shanaz Somji, you call her.
Yeah. Well, the point that I just want to make is, how can a doctor work 24/7 and be fit to do his job? I mean, if I was looking at a doctor, I wouldn't want some guy coming to me that's been working for the last 7 days.
And the hospitals make you do it. And if they want someone to work those hours, doctors do it. And there's nobody else to do it. So if the doctor says no, the doctor has told patients will die.
Is
so
it
the
safe?
The doctors are professionally blackmailed into doing some of these things, even though there's a restriction on hours of work.
Is it safe?
It depends on the specialty. If it's acute medicine, I would say no. But if it's psychiatry, then yes, because in psychiatry, although you have to restrict your activities, knowing you could get called any minute, you're on your toes all the time, you don't actually get called very much, so you can get your night's sleep.
Stephen, I just don't think it's a safe situation, to be honest about it.
Yeah, a doctor working 127 hours in a week.
It is a lot, yeah. Yes, and we do object to that.
Well, but you,
we personally are concerned because agencies are abusive employers. They also are not very honest. They do not tell the hospitals what they tell the doctors. They sometimes charge hospitals and they pay the doctors something very different. They say the hospital is not prepared to pay for accommodation, but they take the money and put it in their own pocket.
But Shanaz has a...
There's a lot of concern with this middleman, and we feel that agency work should be actually stopped. Too many agencies are mushrooming, and there's not enough control over them.
But Shanaz, has an individual doctor not got the moral responsibility to not work 127 hours a week?
If you are told that patients will die because there's no one to attend to them and there's no one to there's no one to take the on-call, no doctor available, what do you do? In those circumstances, your contract also says that it's an unforeseen circumstance and you have to be willing to provide service. If they turn around and say, well, somebody's gone off sick tomorrow, so sorry, you can't have the day off. I know you've been on for the whole weekend, 72 hours, but there's no one else. What do you do if there's no one else? And would the public like it if the doctor turned them down and 7 or 8 patients died that day?
What do you think, John?
I think that I certainly think it's dangerous for doctors to work excessive hours. And secondly, I think that we do need more... doctors on the front line, and we're struggling to provide those, and that's why the cost of locums has gone up.
Have you thought about why you are struggling to provide doctors? It's because your terms and conditions are not that brilliant to work with. The way you are acting, trying to squeeze doctors don't want your job, especially your A&E jobs, and that is why you are relying on locums. Why don't you look at the way you treat your workforce? An accountant working in a private company in London gets a house to stay with by the company or help with mortgage and rent. They get a company car, they get health insurance, they get energy bills paid. And what do doctors get? Nothing. They pay from their pocket for travel, car parking, for accommodation, and for everything else. And they don't get any health service facilities in the hospital where they work.
Oh, heart bleeds for
them. Compare your working conditions. They are poor.
They're
poor. I think it's hard to justify some of the sums that are paid in the figures that you quoted, Stephen. And I think that the role of agencies does need to be scrutinised, but they do provide a valuable service to the health service. But we do need to make your guess is quite right. We do need to make jobs in A&E and general practice more attractive, because the young doctors are moving away to Australia, to Canada elsewhere, exactly, where more attractive terms and conditions are on offer.
Okay.
So we need to look at what we're offering our young doctors who are coming through. You are very talented, you are very well trained, but we need to give them an incentive to stay here and work in the system.
Yes.
Listen, we'll leave it there.
I think what just finally, Stephen, I think what Shania is saying is deeply worrying on the specifics, particularly around the stress around doctors and the fact that our system feels that therefore it's pressurised into paying so much to individuals to do that. But what needs to, the system needs to understand strategically the flows through the system. And it is also deeply worrying that 3.5 years after transforming your care, study work is only now being started into understanding those flows, particularly around older people.
Fergal, thank you. John Cal, thank you. Shanann Somji, thank you very much indeed.